Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
So, first half, Dr. Drew hangs with us. He's in at the top and talks about an emergency on a flight he was on, but it takes a turn for the compelling. I mean, it's an interesting story, but I think emotionally, I think you're going to enjoy psychologically where we take it. That's coming up. We'll talk some Oscar odds as well. First, I'll tell you about LegalZoom. Still early in the year, but if you run a small business, you know 2020, it's going to fly, man. Use LegalZoom right now to make sure you're set up for success. For 19 years, LegalZoom's helped over 2 million Americans start their business by incorporation or forming an LLC and much, much more. And after you're set up, LegalZoom can still help with the costly hurdles that take time and takes time away from growing the business. They'll do it fast, like lease agreements, tax laws, contract reviews, all the stuff you don't want to be distracted to do, and you don't want to do the billable hours either. Go LegalZoom. They have a network of independent attorneys and tax professionals that can provide advice on all those subjects and more. You'll never get charged by the hour since LegalZoom isn't a law firm. It's the best. It's LegalZoom, right, Dawson?
Go to LegalZoom.com today and enter promo code Adam in the box at checkout for special savings. That's LegalZoom.com, code Adam. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, former Loveline board operator Anderson Cowan. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, Dr. Drew stops by, and BetOnline's Dave Mason Skypes in with his Academy Award picks. And now, reminding you to celebrate Black History Month by purchasing several copies of Uppity. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on the truth. We're going to mend it. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. I love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Anderson.
Dr. Drew is in the hizzy. It's a love line.
We love that about you.
I told Dr. Drew to
hang out.
Here
comes Producer Ann. Welcome, everybody. Bruce.
Dr. Drew and I were doing some podcasts earlier today, and I said he told me a very interesting story, and it resonated with it, and for interesting reasons other than the story you're going to hear at first blush. But so I asked him if he could hang out and share that with us, and he graciously hung out.
Gina, you okay with that? You cool with that?
I insist.
So
on an airplane.
Well, Adam has always, you know, people get confused about what my professional training is. And so when we're out in the world, Adam always has a way of describing the kind of physician I am in the following manner. I'll let you do it, Adam.
Well, in a world of Dr. Laura's and Dr. Phil's and Dr. J's.
Dr. Demento's.
And Dr. Demento's, how do we know who the real doctors are? What we grew up traditionally as thinking of a doctor.
A physician, a surgeon.
Yeah, but when I was a kid, just a doctor just meant the guy was a doctor and his stethoscope on. Yeah. You know, right. Is there a doctor in the
jacket,
house?
Yeah.
And now there's a doctor of, you know, Chicano studies and ethnic this and women's sexual, you know, whatever, trend. It's all a fucking mess now.
PhD
and,
is a doctor.
Yes, it's all a mess. So I go, look, my simple definition, if they call out through the intercom on a commercial airline flight, is there a doctor, somebody's down, or somebody needs assistance, and that person stands up, then that is a doctor through the definition that I knew it my entire childhood. That's, in my mind, unfair to all the other people, but that's a real doctor. That's how I call it, a real doctor.
So and Adam would say, if somebody asked, is there a doctor on the aircraft, I'd stand up.
And Dr. Phil wouldn't, unless the person needed some counseling.
Yeah.
And they're going into
some
trial.
Yeah, they're going to the witness stand.
Right. So Dr. Drew has gotten the call before.
Yeah.
And has now answered the call again.
That's right. So I was on my way to Denver from New York, and I heard a guy talking behind me, and I thought it was a physician behind me too, infectious disease guy. I was talking about a critical case, and I thought, I made note of that. So then over there, a loudkeeper comes at a distressed call. Like, if there is a medical professional in this aircraft, please ring your your call button now. And down here I go. Start putting my stuff away. Ring the call button. And they come run and grab me and this other guy right
behind
me.
You're both sitting right next to each other.
Right next to each other.
Did you both ring the button?
You both rang the button.
Who rang it first?
I don't remember.
Can I tell you my move?
Oh, yes,
please. If I'm ever on a flight and they go, we need professional assistance if you're a physician, and two or more buttons go off, I hit mine.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to get to you, but you look good.
Yeah, Marcus will be there, but you guys got this. But when if the shit goes down.
You're like the third guy to yell, I am Spartacus.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
I'm Spartacus. I'm obviously.
That's me. I hit it third.
Yeah.
Right.
Ran to the back of the plane. We were quickly escorted back in the plane, and there is this woman who is unconscious and with the vomit and stuff coming out of her mouth, and we spring into action and realized a couple things. I learned a lot about procedural medicine on an aircraft. Mm-hmm. There is really, when you have a crush of flight attendants and a couple of doctors on a person, pretty hard to get them on the ground. You can't really do that. So we just quickly, I just did play on the seats. I pulled the guy out of the seat, laid her down. She had a friend with her, just stuck her feet in that woman's face and laid the woman down. And she had no pulse.
Across the seats.
Across the seats. But she was kind of stirring, so it didn't look like this was like necessarily no heartbeat. It just she was low blood pressure. And this guy and I started working on her. We got her to come back. And they had lots of good equipment, I learned. I learned you can't use a stethoscope on an aircraft.
What?
They had an excellent stethoscope. The goddamn engine noise is so loud you can't hear anything.
Oh, you physically can't
hear
it.
I couldn't hear anything. I finally got some heart tones. I'm like, I couldn't derive anything from the heart tones, but I knew there were heart tones there. So I'm like, all right, heart's beating. I got that. And she started kind of waking up. So when it laid her down, her pressure was enough to perfuse her brain. Still a lot of kind of vomity kind of stuff going on. And then she started answering our questions and things. We were able to – one of the flight attendants was a nurse. And
coincidentally?
Had been a nurse. Okay. No. And so there she's answering our questions. You know, this happened before. What are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. We're going through the whole thing. And he and I are kind of like – we're feeling pretty good now because he's kind of waking up and we give her some fluids. And the nurse flight attendant runs up to us and goes, the captain wants to land right now. He wants to land immediately. And the other guy and I looked at each other and went like, I think we got this. And then I thought to myself,
hold on. This is the part I'm interested in. But how long had you been in the air? That flight be 4.5 hours.
We were in my head, to flush out exactly how my head was working, right. I figured we had about 1.5 hours to go.
Is that New York to Denver's? Four?
I think three is four something.
Four. Like that, yeah, so you were like half.
We were more than half. We were on the back half. Well, we were over Kansas somewhere, I'm sure of it.
Okay.
And this is all in my head. I'm thinking, all right. We're gonna,
congratulations, by the way, Kansas, on that big Super Bowl win. On the president's tweet.
Great state of Kansas.
Fantastic. Anyway, keep going. You think of them as a basketball powerhouse.
No. Well, I knew that, but.
Yeah. Well, they can play some professional ball, too.
Funny. That's exactly what went through my head when I moved over Kansas. So, crazy.
What did you think?
We're both like, no. I think we're okay here. We're just stabilized, waking up. We're good. We don't really know what happened.
He wants to do an emergency landing.
The captain's like, no, he wants to go. I go, let me talk to him. let me talk to him. I don't think we need to do that. And then I thought to myself, oh, wait a minute. This is a different context for decision making than I normally do. Is it that I just want to get to freaking Denver that I'm saying let's push this? Or is that really the right thing to do? It was a very strange feeling.
Flip side, is there some sort of, I don't know how to better to put it, like hazard pay, like where if you have to land and is it time and a half? Yeah, is it golden time? Like is there
for
something
me or the captain?
For him?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Who knows? I don't know what his motivation was.
Well,
exactly right.
His motivation is
liability.
If something happens, he's liable. Yeah. And you always just go, I don't care if there's a 0.5% chance I'm landing this plane.
But you just kept flying.
But by the way, then I thought to myself, what if I'm the guy making the call? I really don't know what caused this whole episode and something else does happen to her. That's not okay.
Well,
so I thought, now I'm thinking all this simultaneously. Like, do I just want to go to Denver? Or am I pushing this too far? What if something does go wrong? And the other guy was with me. He was like, no, we got it. It's fine. She's going to be okay. What is what?
Well, as I pointed out to Drew when we were doing the Adam and Drew show, the other guy was with you also desired to arrive in Denver as well. So you're kind of fishing from the same pond,
Yeah.
But What really made this?
He really, now I think about it, he really wanted to get to Denver because he'd been delayed and he shouldn't have been on that flight. He was supposed to go direct to San Francisco, but got stuck on that flight.
I was about to consider Denver as a massive hub. So
think about
a lot
that.
Of people trying to make connections.
He really didn't want to.
But the big picture for the kids that are listening, and Drew and I were, this is what I was attracted to in this discussion, the part where Drew snapped into action, the woman on the flight, and she was okay, and everyone landed safely and everything
and
like
by
that.
By the way, I knew we were okay. I stopped reassessing myself when she sat up and goes, oh my God, can we take a selfie?
Oh no!
Yes. Oh yes.
So
I too am a teen mom.
So the part that I found very fascinating about this discussion is Drew having to try to remove his desire to get to Denver from this equation to make a professional decision.
Yeah.
And how it can't help but drift into the thought process. The question is, does it pollute it?
Right.
You know what I mean? There's always going to be trace elements of it because if somebody said, do you want to go to Denver or do you want to land in Muncie, Indiana? And you go, I'm completely agnostic. We'll flip a coin. Doesn't matter to me. No, the answer is I'd like to get
to Denver.
Now it's a little of that is going to pollute this decision. Yes. But is it going to
override?
And by the same time, there's a countervailing force going, God, if I make the wrong call and we don't go down and something actually happens to this woman, that's a pretty powerful motivator too. Right.
But what I was thinking about and saying is there's some people that base every decision on themselves and their desire to arrive in Denver.
Yes.
Every facet of their life.
Majority of Americans.
These are the people you don't want to be behind in traffic or anything like that. But we're a larger and larger group of people are basing their decisions not on whether it's right or wrong, but they're letting all these wants and influences drift in.
There's two versions.
I think they call it character, by the way, but go ahead.
Having character is able to step outside of it, but what's happening today is people have something called motivated reasoning. They have they're motivated to reason their way to a certain conclusion. And then, because they're so highly motivated in their reasoning, they will often reason from conclusion. In other words, they'll state the conclusion and then reason backwards rather than look for evidence for their conclusion.
To get to where they're going.
Or even take evidence because they're motivated not to. They're motivated to say, no, it's so, and here's my reason why.
Right. It's a kind of reverse engineering once you've arrived. And I painted this example, and I think this is where we're at. You go, everybody, when their kid would trick-or-treat, and you'd hit that house that had the plastic pumpkin outside, and it'd have to be full of Reese's peanut butter cups, and it'd say, one, please.
Please
just take
honor
one.
System.
Just take one. All right. And everyone goes, I would like to empty this pumpkin head into my pillow sack.
Into my head.
That's what I would – yeah, that's what I would like to do. But what about those who come after me, and then what about the decisions or wishes of the homeowner? So now, what do I do? Well, I'd like to do this one thing, but there's also part of me that knows it's wrong, and I don't want to be a bad person. So how shall I reconcile this? And now, in the past, there was always a small percentage of people that just did the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. But they labeled themselves as wrongdoers. They're like, that guy's a bad kid, or that guy's a bully, or a troublemaker, or whatever it is. Like, there was we all knew. Out of 10 kids, there were 2.5 of them that would capsize the thing, and then the others did the right thing. Now we have an ever-growing group of people that are capsizing the pumpkin into the bag, not labeling themselves thieves or bad people, labeling the homeowner a racist.
Or a bigot or something. Yeah. Some bad guy.
Could possibly be a bigot as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Drew, for that clarification.
But I mean, you're doing
are you homophobic? Whatever it is.
Justification.
That person's a bad person.
Yeah.
And now I get to do what I want to do, which is you just reverse engineering. And also,
that's motivating from it's reasoning from conclusion.
My
right?
thing is,
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't. Well, what if that person is a bigot? You're still not welcome to more than one peanut butter cup. There's still everyone who's coming
still
behind you. You're still a thief, you know? This is the new world order. There's what you want to do, but I don't want to live in the skin of this person called the thief, or I don't want to live in the skin of the person that just wants to get to Denver, even if it may possibly cost a life.
Kill somebody.
So everyone must get very skilled at floating outside of their body when they're making decisions and figure try not to factor your desires to get to Denver or peanut butter cups heavily into your decision. This is what, this is where we're at, and this is why, again, it's just at, once you get to Denver, there's dogs everywhere because people want, they want to do it, and they're not fact, they're only factoring themselves in.
Didn't we go further downstream into the doting mom conversation?
Yes.
Because that was interesting, too.
Yeah.
And then we talked to a murderer.
Mm. Oh, yeah. We got some interesting people on the show. Yeah.
Anderson.
Yeah. Having a doting mom, not a good mom, but a doting mom, mm-hmm. what Drew and I have decided is the motivating factor in a lot of this behavior. Mm. The mom.
The one that fusses over you too much.
It's enabling.
You can do no wrong.
Like you can do no wrong.
The love overfloweth.
Yeah. We've all had those roommates, but it's me. But it's them. It's his highness is now. Right. It's his dirty dishes. And it's different than your dirty dishes. It's his or hers. There's a lot of that.
Adam and I had tons of that growing up, tons of it. Oh, my God, our moms were just...
Drew doesn't like to talk shit about his mom, but his mom didn't do a lot of focusing on Drew, right?
Absolutely not. And Adam, he's the same, doesn't like talking about his mom or his grandma either. Nothing.
A little more mystery, a little less history, so I like to say. But, yeah, if you grew up without that, then you are just a civilian.
No.
It's not... His Highness, it's whose dishes.
And it's usually what you do wrong. You know, you're there for the service of the queen or the king or everybody else. That's sort of
right.
What
so
you do.
Drew's sort of lack of doting. And now you have to think about the parents that doted and when you grew up. But think about it's the mom that does it to the sons.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
The dad doesn't do it as much. Mm. The moms... You can have a concerned mom, a good mom, and a loving mom. That's not – the difference is the mom, when the kid brings home straight D's and F's, the mom that goes in to yell at the principal versus yell at the kid and figure out what the fuck is wrong with them and why they're not studying hard enough. Everyone has a friend or two who had that mama. They're the worst roommates, and then they make bad – husbands and they make bad citizens because –
bad employees.
They make bad employees. They have a skewed view of what's going on.
Right.
They don't it was interesting when I had one of my nephews come in or not come in or eventually get fired from Chassis Media because he wouldn't come in. I was discussing, you know, sort of how to approach it with my sister, and she kept saying, "I understand he didn't live up to your expectations." And I kept stopping her, and I kept going, no, no, he didn't show up. Right. That's not...
I expected him to show up.
Yeah. That is true, but that's not me putting...
Yeah.
Why doesn't this guy... Why can't he run an Avid? He's 19 years old, for Christ's sake. I told him to take 8 seconds of air out of that scene. He took 7 seconds. It's not that. And I would say, no, no, don't say that. He didn't show up, and that was the issue. It was an attendance issue, and she... talk back and forth, and she go, okay, well, he didn't live up to your expectation. And I realize
it's kind of putting it on you.
We're not correcting the problem, and you're putting it on me.
Big excuse?
She's a good mom, but the point is her reflex was to push it on me, and instead, she should find her son and try to get some answers.
They're all good moms. It's all a place of love. You can be too good of a mom.
It really
is
this, though.
Too loving, too doting, too whatever.
I'm thinking of something else. Now, I want your crystal brain on this one. You could argue that Archie Manning was a doting father on Eli and Peyton Manning.
I'll bet he was tough, though.
But
being a professional athlete,
that's sort of a different thing with the dads when they're doting.
Oh, I immediately said to Drew when we were talking about this, I don't think the dads factor in.
It's a different thing.
The dads may be enablers.
Yeah, yeah.
But the doting is done by the mom, and that's what gives the kid. I think you're born everything you see is through your eyes and seen through the eyes of your mom and your dad, mostly your mom, like as a young person. And then at some point you get released out into the wild and you look at everything through that prism. Like you don't look at it as like, well, whose turn is it to mow the lawn or whose turn is it
or
shotgun? Yeah, these are the kids that go. I want to ride in the front seat on the way out to the Froyo place. And then when you're leaving, they go, okay, now it's time for your brother to go. And they go, why?
What?
What?
I said shotgun.
Yeah, it's like in their mind, they want to go shotgun there and back.
Sure.
Now
that's what they want.
What you want, obviously, is a person that just goes, all right, I'll take it in the front. What I would do is I'd go,
put that drop.
I'd go, you make the call. Easy. You make the call. You can go on the way there or on the way back, but you're not going both, but I'll split the apple. You pick the half.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way. The biggest burn I ever had in my life in that regard was I went now the person who was always missing this was my buddy Ray. This is why.
What? No way.
This is why there's
Ray?
This Strap is why
in,
there's
everybody.
Difficulty in the adult life.
What?
Because you weren't properly coached up. I famously years ago, me and Chris and the car I ended up buying, black 84 Nissan standard bed pickup truck. No sliding window, no headrest, no camper shell, no nothing, just a standard bed, whatever. We went to Ray's apartment to pick him up to drive to Vegas at night. It was like 10:30. No, it was like 8 o'clock at night. And of course we pulled up. I was just sitting on one end of the bench seat and Chris, who's a big dude, was on the other end of this mini pickup truck. And Ray came down from the apartment and he came around to the passenger side and he went, okay, get out, get in the bed. Here we go for our 5 hour journey. You know, and I was like, I'm not getting out. You get in the bed. Someone's going to have to ride to Vegas in the bed of a mini pickup truck with no earbuds, no phone, no Walkman. No blanket, no nothing. And he goes, no, get in the back. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what.
This is like medieval times.
I will.
Just the strongest guy of the night would come in and just go, yeah.
No, I said, I will get in the back. But when we drive home at noon in July through Barstow and Baker and stuff, on the way home, you're going to be in the back.
You're getting baked in the back.
You're getting baked in the back. There's no shell. There's no pad. There's no nothing. And he said, fine, I'll take it on the way back. I said, okay. And I sat in the back, and I drove to Vegas in the back of a pickup truck.
And drove home.
And when we got to Vegas, Ray found some guy he knew who's an older guy who had money. There's a guy named Saul who was just a professional gambler. He somehow ran into him and he convinced the guy to buy him a Southwest ticket home. So he never did. But he got used to that pattern of life.
Grifter.
I'll just go ahead and put this on layaway, but I'll never have to pay for it.
Still killing it.
Didn't he do the same thing with pick up football games? Like, no, we're starting again.
The kickoff, yeah,
he'd do, you kick off at the beginning, and then to start the second half, you guys would be kicking off again.
I deferred the kickoff to you, to the second half.
That's right.
But in Ray's case, to be fair to him, it's the doting mom plus physical prowess.
Sure.
You had that ability to beat everybody's ass.
Yeah.
Tough combo.
But either way, it doesn't serve you big picture. It's good from 0 to 25. It just doesn't help outside of that.
I saw this is years ago, but I saw like a 60-minute segment or 40 hours or something on this subculture of Italians that I didn't even know existed called Mamonis. You guys familiar with Mamonis?
No. Yeah.
They're like Italian mama's boys. And like they
It was on 60 Minutes.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay, it was.
Okay, yeah. So I saw the same thing as you. This is 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was. Maybe a lot, maybe more, whatever. These are like fully grown Italian men, 25, 26, late 20s, who live with their moms and the moms dote on them. They do the laundry. They cook every night. Like, mommy, what's for dinner? That kind of thing. You know what I mean?
They moved. They went home in their 30s and stuff, or they stayed home, and their mom just becomes their sort of maid and chef. And
there's a whole thing where like the Italian men aren't breeding with the Italian women because they're staying at home into their 30s and living with their moms who just take care of everything.
Yeah. My mom tried to join the Mamoni group and was quickly drummed out. Quickly. She didn't make it to lunch.
She didn't give me a letter going,
who's going to do my laundry? And I'm like, no, Mamonis. Where's my son? He should buy me a hoagie. No.
You got it backwards.
No. What?
No, you're supposed to make lunch for your child.
We make lunch for the child.
Wait, so hold on a second. What kind of craziness is this? You said what?
This is how the Mamonis work.
The school buys the lunch.
No school. Live at home till age 40 or maybe beyond.
40? He's going to put a roof on my house when he's 40.
You don't get the Mamoni culture.
She was shown the door promptly at the Mamoni meeting. Yeah. All right.
Imagine how they hate their moms.
Oh, my God.
Mamonis.
According to December 2018 report, 73% of adult Italian males between the ages of 18 and 34 still live with their mom.
That's 73?
That's insane.
Well, 72.7.
72.7?
I rounded up to 73.
That's insane.
Well, look.
That's weird.
Everybody, once you offer it. Thing. Once you offer it, I mean, once it's free,
it's hard. It's,
this is my kind of problem with my Bernie Sanders stuff. Like, once you put it out there, people will take it.
What if Sonny becomes a Mamone?
Oh, he may.
With the net.
He may already. He may already be. He really, may already be.
Let's call Annette and see when she expects him to move out. What age? Was she ideal?
Let's ask Dave Mason what the over-under is on Sonny moving out.
Jesus Christ. God.
It's just infinity, son.
Mamone's boy. All right, is Dave on?
We're getting him on right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Women, almost 60%. Is that of Italian women? I mean, everyone is...
A lot of millennials living at home these days.
They're just taking adolescence and just drawing it, just dragging it out.
And the moms aren't kicking them out. They're pretty complicit.
Remember how fast you wanted to be an adult?
I was tunneling. Seriously, I chewing my way through the walls.
Trying to get out of it.
Trying to get out of that.
I mean, you went to college at
17.
How far from Pasadena did you go?
3,000 miles.
Like as far as you could possibly go, right?
Just tunneling the whole way. Like, please get me out of here.
Yeah, I obviously
Adam literally tunneled.
I moved into
a construction site.
I moved into the garage as fast as I could move into the garage just to have my own claimed it in the name of Spain. I went my own sovereign nation there. You know, it'd be nice if it had a bathroom, but still,
you had a hose bib.
And a hose bib.
Real windows.
And a popcorn tin, be fair.
You know what?
Decorative popcorn.
And it's not like I didn't finish the popcorn before I began crapping in the
He had an ensuite bathroom.
You know, it seemed like a pretty lame graduation gift at first.
At the time.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine gift for graduation, you got a tin of decorative popcorn. Was the offering.
Stopped at the CVS on the way.
They were just reminding you about your white privilege, Adam. Come on.
This is Vince and Pat Bruno, who also, their famous gift was, on your birthday, they had a card with slots in it and a nickel for every year older you were. Like, God, I was like, I wish I was 185 so I could fucking buy a skateboard. But no, alas, I was 9. Put a nickel, could have been a dime, like in the slot. And the saddest part is that was a big deal for me. It's ooh, cash on the barrel head.
You counted on that nickel.
Yes. Dave Mason, you're on the line.
I'm here.
All right. I got a new headset. We're raring to go.
Yeah, it's actually an old one. I had to pull it out of the box and an old one I used, but I guess this was going to work better, so we'll see.
All
fingers
right.
crossed.
Max Apata said we sent over a new one, but
the new one, the newer one. We like sent the, over?
You hit newer.
Yeah.
You hit newer when you said it to me?
Yeah.
You said it's a newer one.
No, when I said the new headset, I meant like the new one that
we
I
got him a
got
new
a
one.
New headset. It's like because he sent. Oh my God.
We got him a new one.
We didn't.
Did you say newer or new?
I believe I said newer.
You do believe that?
Yes.
You want to listen to our earlier conversation we
Is
had?
Is there a way we can do that?
Would I have questioned newer? You said we got him a new headset.
Good talk.
We didn't get him. We tested it. We
threw something out of the Boston. I'm sorry about that.
All right. You said you had the only part of this whole conversation is where you're convincing yourself you said the word newer to me.
Okay.
Don't convince yourself. That's making it easy on you. You never said newer. Newer's a weird thing. I'd go, what are you talking about? I mean newer.
Okay.
You said we got him a new headset.
I said he sent us a picture of the new, I guess, new headset.
Yeah, he didn't say newer.
That we used.
Yeah. All right. We got him a new headset. But it's an old headset that's newer.
That's Max Apata, new to us. Doting mom, do you think?
To something. No, he has young person escape syndrome. They escape conversations. They're Gabe's out there going, we need more Tupperware. I'm like, no, we don't. You need to put the shit in the Tupperware.
Chris slept in
you
a drawer.
You say newer. Have, yeah, you hit words like newer, but you never said newer. Just said
I didn't
new.
Mean that it was a new headset. I meant a picture of the
Chris,
new.
Have I taught you not yet? Just
you said we got him a new headset. He's got a new headset.
Do a read.
That's what you said.
Okay.
You didn't say newer. That's what I'm saying.
Perfect.
Stop
Perfect.
That syndrome.
Well done.
Stop the syndrome. Good. You didn't say newer.
Okay.
You said new.
Okay.
Can do, boss.
Tap out. Tap okay, out. Boss.
That's all.
Stay down.
It's good. You got it.
Don't talk yourself into Chris. Thinking you said Chris. Newer.
Choose my corner, man. Okay.
You didn't say newer. Yeah, you said this. New. We got okay. him a new headset.
Stay down.
Got it.
If you'd said newer, I would have stopped and said, what does
again.
That mean?
You got it. Here we go.
I'll be better next time. I'm not as good as I think I am.
It's not his fault. Everybody under 40 just has the gene. You just thought you said newer to me. Why did you think that?
I still think it's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
But I'm not as good as I think I am.
All right, so say what you said.
Okay. Dave Mason sent us a picture of his headset, but he didn't send the old broken one. He sent a picture of the new one that we did when we did the sound check.
Well, he didn't say newer.
I'm purposely not saying newer, just to say if...
So you did tell me he got a newer headset.
I said we have a new setup.
Yeah, a new headset.
I heard newer.
You said we have a new headset.
This is insane.
No, it's not insane. Don't say newer.
Why does this bother you so much?
Because you do it all the time, and it creates problems. You have to correct this.
Gina, to the degree
you, why do you think when Gabe is telling me we need more Tupperware, and I'm telling him no, why does it bother me? Why does it bother me?
Because he didn't need it.
We didn't need it. It's not correcting the problem.
Okay.
He's putting it on that. That's what I'm saying. You and I have to communicate all the time over little things all the time.
Okay, so
and when we start tweaking words, or I said this or I did that, you're not helping the communication. Okay. You said we got him a new headset. I said good. He's got a new headset.
Get the fuck out of this building.
That's it. When you reduce it to, I said newer, then that doesn't help our communication.
Right.
Because you didn't say newer. Because I would have questioned that.
I think I am.
To the degree that I do understand, I don't care.
All right. Now, I hope it works perfectly.
Well, Dave sounds great.
But we didn't get him a new
one. Guys, I got to go.
You got to go? Drew, don't you want in on the Oscar prop bets?
Okay. All right. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Dave,
go ahead. I do have to go. 5 minutes.
What year is your headset from?
It's newer. It's kind of newest. I have no idea. I've had it for a while. It's a new setup, though. It's a new setup. I'm using this one instead of the other one, even though the other one was fine for other interviews. I don't know, but this one seems to be working. So
sounds crystal clear.
All right, let's move forward.
Please.
I know everyone thinks I'm nuts. It's the verbiage. It's the verbiage, Chris, and you do it often, and it's something I'm trying to break you of. I broke Matt of it, by the way.
He's definitely broken.
He's definitely broken. Well, he screwed the pooch, and when I did my best, and I said, stop saying that. This is a softer version of that. Boom. This is you scanning after the whatever. Don't say it. Just word it. Easier. It's a better life. It'll be better for your wife. And your kids, God forbid. All right. Sorry, Dave.
Yes, sir.
The Oscars. What do we think? Brian's made some bets.
Yeah, Dave and I spoke last night. He was a guest on the Film Vault this week talking Oscar odds and such. So, Dave, we have a baseline of knowledge, but I have some questions about your prop bets on Bet Online. Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Absolutely.
Number one, easy. Number one, the first one I see here is gender of first person to appear on stage, female -250, male +200. Do you have some intel? Because this should be a coin toss, right? Or what is the reasoning behind the heavy odds for female?
That's just actually we opened it closer to a pick'em, and people were betting female, so. That's why we're going up. Okay. That's why we increased the odds on female. And transgender is still up 20-1
20
as well.
20-1 if you think so transgender person.
Yeah, -250 female, that's the favorite. Male +200 transgender, 20-1. So, no, it's just a matter of bets coming in on female, trying to even out a little bit of action.
Gotcha.
Yeah, go ahead.
Other questions. You have one here that's interesting to me. Total upsets in the big five categories, if there's zero upsets, less than one half, it's -200. But if there's one upset or more over one half, it's 150, +150. What are the big five categories?
Oh, picture, best actor, best supporting actor, actress and actor. Best actress and supporting actress.
So if you think there's going to be an upset in one of those categories, any one of those categories, you can, one and a half to one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, finally, the one I'm most interested in, will a winner trip or fall as they walk to the microphone? Question, the odds are no, -900. If they yes, trip or fall, 5-1, +500.
Nice.
Okay, number one, are we counting a stumble as a trip or fall? Do they have to hit the ground? Because every year somebody stumbles.
I think Jennifer Lawrence is the last one I could think of.
Hand or knee must touch the floor.
Okay.
Like that makes a lot of hands could go down.
And does it have to be on stage or can it be on? Because like for these, best documentary winners, they got a long walk to go down the aisle.
Right. The wording says from the moment announced to the moment they reach the microphone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Birth.
It's not a bad
But net. To be fair to the documentarians, they don't wear the long flowing sequence gowns
typically,
with the high stiletto.
Yeah, they're
little
suits.
Little more super denim, J.C. Yeah. Penney, you know what I mean? Boots on the ground.
Yeah.
Because the thing that'll screw you up is the long and the flowing mixed with the big heel, right?
Yeah.
Slippery steps.
That's the Jennifer Lawrence formula.
So in the Best Picture, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is the favorite? Is that correct? My thing's cut off. My numbers are cut off a little bit. It's Parasite is the favorite?
1917.
Oh, 1917.
No, 1917.
Oh, sorry.
Yep, 1917's the minus 250 favorite. Followed by Parasite at plus 275. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is plus 650. Everything else is pretty long shot.
If you're looking for fun long shots, that's not a bad category because, like, The Irishman and Ford v. Ferrari appeal to an older demographic.
Doesn't
and
the
that,
Golden Globe predict the winner pretty much?
No.
Not anymore.
No,
really?
Not at all.
It's like the squid that pulls the ping pong ball that
the
has
World
the
Cup.
Team
octopus,
logo
octopus,
through it. Whatever
please.
It is. Whatever it is.
Some mollusk.
It works every time until someone announces it works, and then it stops working.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It used to be a precursor, and then someone said it was a precursor, and then it stopped being a precursor. Best directing, whose favorite, Brian?
Mendes. Sam Mendes for 1917 is a slight favorite over Bong Joon-ho.
For
Parasite.
What do you think they're going to do? We like the hostless thing?
I mean, that it would be very surprising if a host came out unannounced at this point.
They should, right?
That'd be an awesome move. That'd be an awesome move, but I can't imagine they would do it.
Unless they got canceled mid-show from a tweet.
My kids are going to grow up in a world with no drivers and no hosts. They're driverless cars and hostless shows.
Interesting.
And we grew up with nothing but hosts and drivers.
Yeah.
Our drivers were wearing like high boots and caps and walking around and opening. I mean, Johnny Carson hosted, and Johnny Carson had a guy in a suit driving him places.
With a captain's cap on. Yep. So
that's right. Dave?
Yes, sir.
Give us a couple, like, what are a couple smart bets that you think would just be good, smart money for upcoming Oscars?
All right. Well, you know, we do take a little bit of sharp action, but not too much on this anymore. Best that I like all the wacky stuff. Who will best actor thank first and all that kind of stuff. You know, we kind of go off the Super Bowl odds and start getting some wacky stuff out there as well. I haven't even seen all these pictures, but who will the best actor thank first? Husband, wife, partner, plus 250. I like that. The Academy is plus 100 favorite, but I'm going husband, wife, partner at plus 250. That's one I like.
And Brian, other thoughts?
Dave, I'm going to throw out. So it's fun. At this point in the Oscars, you know, the award season, everyone knows a lot of the awards they're going to go to. Like, for example, it's an unusual year that, like, all the acting awards are heavy favorites. You know, Joaquin Phoenix, Judy Garland, Renee Zellweger. A lot of these are heavy, heavy favorites. Brad Pitt. But some of the fun bets are the ones that are a little bit of a long shot. Look at Scarlett Johansson for best Easy, Drew.
That was beautiful.
Look at Scarlett Johansson for best actress.
Anticipated that.
Scarlett Johansson, what's her odds right now, Dave? Is she plus 650 still?
Plus 750. So $750 profit on a $100 bet.
A long shot, admittedly, but I've seen the movies. The Judy Garland performance was good, but Scarlett Johansson's was just as good. Her first Oscar nomination, by the way, so might be some public sentiment.
This is Scarlett Johansson's first Oscar.
Crazy, right? She's a really good actress.
I feel like she's everywhere all the time. Very surprised. You can check out betonline.ag and see all the odds and all the props and all the Oscar bets out there. Dave Mason, thanks for the newish technology you've provided with the newish headset. I appreciate that.
I like it.
Huh? How's it working?
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave Mason. All right, Drew. Sorry I had experienced that.
It's all right. It's good. It's fun.
All right. I got an Applebee's commercial.
All right. I
got
to blow out here.
You got to blow out of here?
Yep. I do got to go.
Where are you going?
I'm going to
back
do
to Denver for a funeral.
Another podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kelsey Cook, who did my After Dark podcast.
You're seeing other podcasts now?
I'm seeing them. We need to talk about this.
It's uncomfortable.
Well, I know we had an open podcast relationship.
We do,
but
I'm
haven't
not consummating these relationships, so that makes a difference. I'm just sort
That's worse. It's emotional.
It's platonic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the worst. I wish it was just a meaningless sexual podcast.
She's going to take the resources away from you.
She's engaging your mind and your
betrayal.
What?
It's the betrayal. It's not the actual podcast, but it's being lied to.
The emotional
part of it. I didn't lie.
I've been telling you all about it.
But I've tuned you out.
Yeah, drop it.
And now I've heard you for the first time. Yeah. It's that I had to hear it from somebody else. I do like when people focus on who they heard it from.
Right. Yeah.
It's not that you're banging my sister. It's that I heard it from an owl.
And that you lied.
And you lied.
Those are
the
two things I can't forgive.
Yes. And Woodsy never lies.
A one, a two, a three.
All right, see you, Drewski. Okay. All right, let's see. The Applebee's commercial that upsets me.
Go to drdrew.com
is what I wanted to say.
Do you guys remember the episode, I think it was last season, or the last season that there was of Curb, where Ed Begley Jr. is on the plane next to Larry David, and they ask for a doctor, and Ed Begley won't say anything? Like, no, I just want to get to where we're going.
Oh, right.
I was thinking about it the whole time, but I didn't want to interrupt.
Ed Begley's not playing Ed Begley.
Correct. He's playing a doctor. He goes, are you kidding? I want to get to where we're going. I'm not going to tell him I'm a doctor.
That show's tough because Ted Danson is Ted Danson.
Like, that's so, right.
Richard Lewis is Richard Lewis.
That's right.
It was the Entourage scenario.
Right.
Half the people be themselves.
You get about halfway in the episode to see if it's a character
or not. If you see Ed Begley, I almost assume he is Ed Begley.
No,
but he's a doctor.
Or Funkhauser.
In the communication department, in the miscommunication department, I had
Here we go.
I was talking to somebody. I was at the Uppity premiere, and I ran into Tommy Dreese, who's a professional Trans Am racer, and also ran into Burton of Burton Racing, who owns the race team. So this guy, Tommy Dreese, races for Burton Racing, and so they were both there. And Tommy's a good guy, a motorsports guy, but he's a professional Trans Am driver. And so we were talking, and he and I did the race at Willow Springs a couple years ago with Claudio Burton's team, and we ended up he came in first, I came in third, but we, you know, ended up on the podium together, and we made friends. And so he said to me, we got to get you back in a Trans Am car, a professional Trans Am car. And I said, oh, yeah, that would be awesome. And I said, what's the series? Where are you guys stopping? You're going on tour. They're in Portland. They're all over the place. Mm. He said, well, we're coming up to Laguna Seca this year. And I said, ooh, professional drive in a Trans Am car at Laguna Seca. And then I thought to myself, that's good because I know that track well. And it's always good if you've been around a track 300 times versus when I went to Willow Springs the first time. I was like, I hate this track. I don't have any experience on it. I'm no good. I worked my way up into it. But I was like, ooh, Laguna Seca and a modern Trans Am Trans Am 1 car. And this guy, Claudio Burton, runs a big team, first class everything, and it's awesome. So I said to him, okay, you get me that ride in that car. You figure that out. And then he said, okay, Tommy Dreese said. And I said, okay. And then the very next thought that popped into my head, because I have this with like Seth MacFarlane's Christmas party every year. Mm-hmm. The next thought is, oh, Christ, what do I
Where
got?
Where am I?
Where am I on that calendar? I have no idea when the race is. So then I think I'm in race world. So I'm like, holy Christ, I wanted to go to Spa in Belgium and do a 12-hour endurance race. And that is May 1st. That's Saturday, May 1st.
You going to Belgium?
To Spa.
Belgium's awesome.
And I said to myself, shit, I hope this Trans Am race isn't that weekend anywhere near
it. You spoke it into existence.
Yeah, but because you're a Corolla, what happened?
What happened was I ran I was running into the studio yesterday, and I said to the Porcelain Punisher, Matt Fondelier, I said, Matt, hop online. Trans Am Series, Laguna Seca, 2020, date, go. And I ran into the studio. And then moments later, something came up on my screen. August 15th, Laguna Seca, Trans Am race.
Okay.
And I went, August 15th? So my first thought was, ooh, I could make that.
That's Pebble Beach.
Yeah. I was like, I said, so here's my thought, because this is how, this is what I do. I went, August 15th. And then I went, I could make that. And then I went, wait a minute. Isn't August 15th Pebble Beach? Yeah. That's when they do the Rolex Historics. And then I thought, it does move around a little bit. It'll go up a week or down a week. It doesn't have to be August 15th. Mm-hmm. It can move around. I was thinking about that. And then I said, but wait a minute. There's the prehistorics that they have the week before. And then there's the historics. Are they doing it this year on like August 29th? Or is there an August 29th? I don't know what's going on. But all right, it's close. It's close, but that's all right. I'll go there. I'll do the Rolex Historics. I'll get some seat time on that track. And then I'll just come back the next week. I'll do the Trans Am race. But either way, not going to be in Belgium.
Yeah.
I'll be here. There's no comedy dates. August 15th, it is. Well, it turns out that there was some confusion.
Oh, no.
I think Matt in his haste, or my haste, probably said to Chris, when is that race at Laguna Seca, I guess? And Chris said, the Rolex Historics are August 15th or something like that. Is that what happened, Matt?
Well,
some version of reaching out?
Well, let me just say, first of all, I'm sorry for the mistake. Mm-hmm. That's totally on me. All I did was tell Chris to type in that date. He had no knowledge of our conversation that I'm
aware of.
Chris
is not at fault here.
That's correct. 100% on me.
But you asked him for what?
I asked him to literally, Chris, you don't need to tell me. I literally just asked him type in August 15th. Like that was the date that I looked up because I was thinking of the Rolex Historics.
Right. So I said Trans Am Monterey 2020, and you just,
I thought you said transgender, and then yeah.
You just
there,
did the,
you know?
What race does he do in Monterey every year?
Yeah.
Right.
Although, anyway, simple. So it says the 15th, and my head's going, oh, I can do this. And then I go, wait a minute, when is Monterey? They're not going to push it back. They don't have the Trans Am race right on top of the historic race. And it starts to dawn on me that this is a very suspicious date.
Right.
So I then say to Chris for some clarity. Now, in my mind, I just said to Matt, find the date of the Trans Am race. And I went to the studio, right, and all I'm seeing is August 15th. But it starts to dawn on me. It can't be. So when is...
I'm dying to know, actually.
Yeah,
when
roll,
is
please.
The actual Trans Am race to be held at WeatherTech Raceway, formerly known as Laguna Seca in Monterey?
It is May 2nd.
Okay.
Oh.
When is the race in Belgium?
May 2nd.
It's the same day! It's the same day.
Should I point out that on the calendar you're supposed to be at the San Jose Improv?
I told Mike, I know. I already told Mike we're going to cancel that.
Okay.
It's this exact same day.
Okay.
Oh,
the day when I was worried about, oh, it's going to be too close and I'm going to get back from. Now, don't have to worry about that. It is the same day.
There are a lot of days to choose from.
Which would you rather do? I assume you would like to do both, but which would you rather do?
They're both killer. One is a little more convenient because you can drive there and you don't have to go to
LAX.
Yeah, and
other airports.
And there's a monetary issue. They ain't free. You try to look for sponsorship or other various whatevers, but these are not cheap endeavors, and so you'll factor some of that in. Either way, I will now endeavor to do either one of these events. It is tempting. It's always tempting to drive on a track you know well versus a track you've never driven on before, but it does.
Brussels live show.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Let's offset some of those costs and just go do something in Bruges.
The fact that it was the same exact day. And when I first saw the August 15th date, I was like, ooh, goody. But then it started, all the suspicion and doubt started. And then I was like, at a certain point, I was at a place where I was like, okay, something screwed up about this August date, but it can still be any other day.
Yep. Right.
So it could be in April or July or something. It doesn't have to be. No, it's the same day. Okay.
Of course.
Of course.
You'll let us know.
That's right. First world problems, everyone. Yeah. All right. Anderson Cowan is here. Oh, Anderson is a movie maker. Anderson does the Film Vault with Paul Bryan. Anderson was engineer. Anderson, for me at Loveline, well, Mike was there for my first 3 years.
This is a Geo or an Anderson question because Anderson predates me. He was there before I was.
I was there all in 10 years. Engineer Mike, I started with, and it must have been 2 years, although it's hard to tell because those first two felt a lot longer than the last two, you know? Mm. And then Anderson is going to tell us when he came on the scene. And was he there for Pennywise and Poo Poo City?
Oh, I hope we talk about that.
I think that was his first night.
Oh.
Really?
If I remember correctly, he was like training that night or something.
And has got a movie out called Groupers. It is a fascinating journey from the mind of Anderson. It is. It will get you thinking. So we'll take a quick break. We'll bring Anderson Cowan in right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
Hey, Corolla fans, Mike Dawson here. I got good news and bad news. Bad news first. We're almost done with this month's sales of Adam's Monthly Nut. Good news is, you'll still be able to get all the incredible products from Wallet Ninja after this month's Adam's Monthly Nut. Head to WalletNinja.com to get your fully customizable, American-made credit card multi-tools that'll fix glasses, open bottles, peel fruit, and save the goddamn day. A big thank you to Wallet Ninja for this month. We'll see you in February for another shipment of Adam's Monthly Nut.
In the spirit of Murrow, Jennings, Cronkite, here's another great moment in local news.
62 new emojis are on their way to your phones. Insert head exploding right here. The new text replacements range from a pickup truck to a pinata to a transgender flag, even snapping fingers.
That's a great moment in local news. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Anderson Cowan in studio, formerly engineer Anderson, now filmmaker Anderson. Groupers is the name of the movie. You can find it at groupersthemovie.com. I watched it last night. I really enjoyed it. I thought the actress who played the lead was
Nicole D'Ambro.
She was really good.
Yeah, she was.
It's amazing how many good actors there are out there available who just want to do a project.
It's scary.
I'm guessing it wasn't for the money.
No, she made minimum wage.
And really?
When you put up that you have a feature film that you're making and you got a lead role and you're paying, everybody will submit to that. You know, if they're not, if you haven't heard of them, they will submit to your project. I looked at least 5,000 girls before I found her.
Really?
Yeah.
She was great.
Not even for the film.
I was just looking at girls, yeah.
I think she's... Well, you made the movie. When did you guys wrap?
Well, we wrapped the movie 2017, and then festivals, and then it finally got released last year. I mean, it takes forever. As you know, it just takes forever.
Ugh. Yeah, I know. And then, and also, I was impressed by how many IMDb ratings it had. It had like 700 plus.
Oh, was it up to 700 plus?
It's a lot of fans.
It's up to 700 plus, which... It's a lot of action on IMDb. There's a lot of stand-up specials.
Movie.
Oh, well, yeah, not for Star Wars, but there's plenty of movies or small movies or whatever, stand-up specials or people you've heard of, and there's 300 or 400, but 700's a lot. I know there's some controversy.
I got a little lucky there, and I'll tell you what happened. I knew I was going to push some buttons with this movie, and it's got homophobic themes, and it's about group think tank, I'm actually a little bit nervous to be in here. It's weird. I'm never nervous, but Brian, I'm actually a little bit nervous. Brian, please do not cover for me. But
the movie's about groupthink. It's about homophobia.
I knew I was going to piss some people off. I pissed people off, which is great, but I forgot that those people actually have a voice now. So
and keyboards.
Like overnight, it went from like a 7.3 on IMDb, and a bunch of people went on there and gave it a 1 star, like a couple hundred people. Like overnight, it dropped down to like a 4.1 because they were angry at my premise. And then I put a call to action out there saying, hey, can we try and fix this? And then we got a little traction.
Well, you know, as I've tried to study the algorithms of IMDb, I realize it's the top 1,000 voters category that fucks everybody up, because I'll have a movie that averages a 10, but it averages a 4 in the top 1,000 voters, and then that just skews the whole thing down.
Yeah, they're heavy weighted.
They're heavy weighted.
Yeah.
But the thing I was talking about with Brian about the movie is the group that was upset, and Brian and I had a brief discussion in the parking lot about this yesterday, and I was a little confused about it.
So am I.
Brian was saying that the evangelical pro, it's a gay is a decision, people were up your ass. But I was like, I thought the folks that were religious and on the right claimed it was a decision. Mm-hmm. And the people on the left said, you're born that way, like Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
So isn't the argument if you're right-wing person or religious person is it's a choice and they made the wrong choice, because how can you argue with born that way? So I thought born that way was the left argument and the right evangelical argument was it's a choice.
Now, the people that are upset about it is that there's gay themes in it to begin with, and that two homophobes were actually forced to become gay for each other, and they thought that that was from the message boards that were sent to me from listeners who actually found some kind of source of the anger and the beginning of it all. They were very upset at the idea of anyone making this movie to begin with.
The choice
branches off later.
You're absolutely right about they believe that it's a choice, but they shouldn't make that wrong choice, right?
That's the evangelicals. Yeah. That's a religious people.
Yeah.
Right. And then born that way, kind of hard to argue with born that way, although you could go, they should just be killed then.
that is the ultimate argument.
From our time, I'm very excited to be here, too. I got to meet Dr. Drew out in the hall. That was pretty exciting. Mm. It was pretty good to see that guy.
A selfie?
Meet Dr. Drew.
You got to see Dr. Drew after all those years.
From our years on Loveline, too, we also know that, you know, there are people that get created like in their uncle's basements, and they become gay because of horrible things that happened to them in their childhood as well.
Yeah, I think what I learned from Loveline is there's people that are born gay, and then there are people that get so fucking scrambled that their sexuality just gets screwed up. And then women who are more flexible sexually to begin with, if they get fucked with, they're all over the place, because there's a lot of guys that are, let's say you were molested, but you're so locked off in your sexuality that you may be mentally a mess, but you're still not experimenting sexually and with, you know, your proclivities are still, I like women. Women, your average 19-year-old college chick who sailed through adolescence is still pretty flexible sexually. Yes, Gina Grant?
Sure.
And if that,
for example,
if that girl was molested as a kid, then they're really capable of being with anyone at any time.
Well, and
get on your knees, scumbag!
Oh, God.
That's right.
And acting out because of it, acting out sexually with everybody.
Sure, as we just learned from Jessica Simpson's
That's
tone.
Right.
I heard.
So, you were there the first night, was a training night when we were going to go to Poo Poo City?
It was my very first night training with Mike Dooley in the studio. And I saw that Pennywise was coming back. They had already thrown up on Drew at that point. So
right.
Their reputation preceded them. And I was just hoping to learn how some of the potentiometers worked for your program. And it turned into Poo Poo City, and the cops came, and they didn't actually pull their guns. Like, people think that they pulled the guns, but they had their hands on their guns, for sure.
Fletcher was...
It's a mountain of a man.
Yeah, an amount of man, and I say this with all sincerity, and I used to play football. I've met some big dudes. He's bigger than they are. Mm. He's bigger than guys are in the NFL.
His hand is like the size of my back, and I have a pretty big back.
He's just a massive man. There are a lot of fast guys and strong guys in NFL, but this guy's a big guy, and when he blocks the door,
it's blocked,
and you're going to Poo Poo City.
And I remember Adam was most upset. He was most upset because it was 5 past midnight, and usually he's almost home by
now. That's right.
So yeah,
the clock was ticking.
There's actual footage of it online. Is that on YouTube?
Full 2 hours of
security footage. And you can see Anderson in the back just taking notes.
Anderson is standing. Mike is sitting with the headset on. We're looking at like black and white surveillance footage of it.
Right.
Masturbate on him instead.
No, no, forget about that. Masturbate.
Annihilate him with your wit.
The only thing that I had in mind that could possibly top the vomiting was Poopa City.
Right.
And it's bad. It's bad because, you know, Adam has pushed me to this. Adam has pushed me to this. He's pushed me to Poopa City.
I
swear to God, I'm going to just go to the door right now and lock it.
And then
in this cubicle, I'm gonna poo in my hand,
right?
And I'm gonna put it in your mouth. No. And I'm telling you, it's gonna be bad. It's about ready to happen.
That's bad.
Roll tape.
Explain.
Mm-hmm. You can see this is 20 minutes before he actually punches his own bodyguard in the head very hard.
I forgot he said he was going to crap in his hand and put it in my mouth.
That's what Poopoo City is, Adam.
Yeah. I was the mayor. I was like, I had the keys to Poopoo City in high school. So I was sort of all the radio DJs to threaten with smashing fecal matter into their head.
Then they're done that.
You do that to the Grease Man, you got a problem. Yeah. You do that to Howard Stern, you got an issue.
Dominus,
Adam Carolla.
It's
over. Been there and done that.
That's cute.
Yeah, I've had it done to me. Yeah. So, you know.
Poopoo County.
Now, it wasn't that I was looking forward to it. Yeah. I just understood how it worked, asking you know.
You weren't looking forward to it. No.
But his security guy at some point was kind of came halfway through the door, and he kind of roughed him up and pushed him out and slammed the door.
He punched him right in the face.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Guy came in, he had a big welted eye.
And
why does Fletcher need a security guard?
Yeah, that's a good
point.
He's
a monster.
But Mike Tyson has security.
It's security for the people around Fletcher.
Right. Oh, you just keep him away.
So you don't get taken to Poo Poo City.
Yeah.
So, and then the cop showed up.
Well, there was a grenade. Was that the threat?
A grenade.
Oh, that's something. Yeah. That was the threat. Yeah,
yeah, that was the threat.
And you talk about a low resting pulse. I mean, you're just like, look, until midnight, the world's your oyster. Do what you want. But I'm going to be out the door when this show's over because I got to get home.
I kept telling him, do whatever you want. And then it's going to turn midnight. Then I got to leave.
You don't get overtime.
I didn't get overtime.
Yeah,
and I had a strict policy about being in my car by 12:03.
The worst thing about Fletch, though, is he came back probably 6 months later, and he had sobered up at that point, and it was one of the dullest shows we'd ever done.
I miss the old Fletch.
He is crazy, though. Were you there when he came back on, and he was talking about how he tried to kill himself by tiger?
What?
Broke into a zoo in the middle of the night, hammered, and pulled down his pants, hoping the tiger would take his dick?
So the sobriety didn't take?
No, it didn't take.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if the tiger, I feel like he'd kill the tiger, but
that tiger's in trouble.
Is there, Max Bad, is there more of that tape?
There's 2 hours of that tape.
Jesus Christ.
It's 2 hours.
But there is the end. I mean, he does stand up at some point and block the door, and then at some point he roughs up a guy, and the cops didn't really snap into action. They just filed into the engineering room, right?
Yeah, they're just standing beside me with their hand on their gun.
And that was your first night.
First night, yeah.
First night, the cops show up.
I've been in the building for 3 years working on Pharrell up the hall.
Oh, Pharrell the bench.
That's right.
Grab a go up, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my first night actually doing Loveline.
Oh, you must have been there the night when we had the security guard who fell asleep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got the cord to help you get him fired. Yeah. I still feel bad about
that guy. We got to mic this guy up.
Still sleeping.
He was the security, and he was laying on the front sofa, and he's just sawing logs like, on his back, big dude, you know, making a ton of noise. And at a certain point, Anderson just got a 20-foot extension for the mic, and we plugged it in, and I just quietly crawled out there and put it by his mouth, and we're broadcasting him snoring, and he got fired. Which I felt bad about, but on the other hand, I don't know, you only have to be awake for 2 hours. You don't need to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those security guards gave a lot. Another one shortly thereafter told me that his kid was sick and he needed $40 for medication. And then and then he's going to pay me back the next day. And I found out that was his last night on the show. That was nice.
Security guards are not what they've cracked up to be. Like, not the version of security guard as a kid that you had in your mind.
Security,
unemployable, morbidly obese guys with GEDs who like to have sleep apnea.
One of the Loveline security guards that kind of gave me the idea for groupers. He was from Ethiopia, and he was one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Really, really nice guy. But he saw it was after when we moved down the street at a different studio. We had like a halfway house across the way. So we'd see like heroin addicts all the time at this Fleabag motel out front. And one of them was gay, and he was like making out with his boyfriend out front. And this Ethiopian security guard, I'd never seen the side of him, but he's furious. He's like, in my country, we stone them.
Right.
And I'm like, why are you so angry? It's like, he's just gay. And he's like, why would anyone choose to be gay? I'm like, he didn't choose to be gay, man. You can't choose to be gay. It's like, of course you can. I'm like, then why don't you and I make out? Why don't you choose to be gay with me? Right. And he's like, oh, what do you mean?
We should put a moratorium on anybody who goes, in my country, if you've moved here. Like, if you fled your country, and they're like, in my country? Mm-hmm. In your country, what?
Which country?
When did you flee here? Here it is. You can only talk about native dishes. You cannot talk about lifestyles or the government or how you treat your women because you're here for a reason.
Yep.
So, I'm trying to think of all those moments. There was
one of my first nights as a call screener. You guys obviously have been there for a couple years.
It was a dark night,
but this tonight happened to be the infamous Tom Arnold Holocaust night.
What?
That was your first
one. I'd been on the job for 4 or 5 days at that point.
Still, it's not the first, Brian. Come on.
No, you're right.
Not the first.
First week. You got to find
one upper, like I said before.
Chris, you got to find the Holocaust. you know what's Arnold good now. Makes me laugh.
Is Pennywise was my Poopoo City was my first night training, right? And my first night on my own a few nights later was Moby. And the juxtaposition of those two nights.
Are they different kind of dudes?
Very different types, tones of shows, yes.
Yeah, Moby couldn't block a doggy door.
Yeah.
Like, he's not enough presence to physically. Yeah.
I am imagining Fletcher and Moby in the ring right now, and it's quite delightful, I can tell you that. I'm just picturing the two of them in a ring.
Be a short fight.
Mm.
Yeah, I think Fletcher'd be in the ring. He'd be fucked up, and he'd like, I'm going to pick up this broomstick and beat the shit out of my opponent, and then he would pick up Moby and start swinging him around, and then he'd go, what the fuck happened to Moby?
Where'd he go?
And he's just swinging him around.
Anderson would mix it up with guests, which, of course, is the job of a board op, but Anderson would mix it up with guests. Janine Garofalo comes to mind. You and her
With the guest, she fled the show and said she would never come back.
Because
how
of you?
Is it?
Yeah,
she what did me. You say?
I played a drop that accused a listener of a caller of being gay, and she was furious. Way back then, she was very woke.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she looked at Drew, and she goes, you're going to allow this? And Drew just, he's like, the kids like it. I don't know.
All I remember from Janine Garofalo is I said, hey, good to meet you. And she going, this is my third time on the show.
I'm
going to stop saying good to meet you.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Yeah,
good to see you.
You're looking well.
She made me modify my good to meet you. Any other people you mix it up with, Anderson?
I mean, David Allen Greer, but who doesn't, right?
Mm. What happened?
He walked off. Adam and I were getting into an argument all night long, and David Allen Greer was the guest. And,
what was it about?
It's about you, Brian.
Okay, that sounds about
right. And David Allen Greer didn't like the fact that no one was talking about David Allen Greer for long stretches, so he walked off. That was the last time I saw Dag. It's sad.
Did in the band that famously walked home,
The Darkness. Well, they were one of the bands. There may have been more than one.
There were a couple bands.
The Darkness.
That
I was there for that era, and they were like, they came in all full of piss and vinegar, and then like as soon as you started talking about like STDs, they're like, this is not the show we thought it was. We don't feel comfortable being here, and they left.
The bands. Let's try to figure out. You guys write it down. The bands with the worst attitudes.
Well, they're always British, right? I mean, you recognize that early on.
British mostly, although you can have. There's feast or famine in the British world. Mm-hmm. They're super fun or they're
the
horrible. They're mostly horrible.
Right. They take themselves way too seriously.
Right. Chumbawamba was horrible.
Right.
Horrible. In the disappointing department, some of the bands, sometimes there's bands you like and you have no
idea. Violent Femmes.
Hated them.
Weren't the Butthole Surfers assholes?
Well, that was before my time.
And didn't like them.
Flea and Gibby Haynes were on, and I guess that Drew absolutely despised them. But that was before Adam and I think.
There was, oh, God, not Moby, but who was the black performer who Drew famously got into it with? He had a name like Moby.
I don't, Afro Man?
No, it was like his name was almost Moby, but it was
they're Goldie,
Mos Def.
It was something else. All right, Cowboy Junkies. I liked their music. They were horrible.
Mm.
I hated them.
Who was the guy? So
the Kooks.
It was Jerry Cantrell who died.
Yes,
or Lane Staley.
Lane.
Okay, Jerry Cantrell came on the show
right
soon after, and was so. I mean,
after
he might have been disturbed about the death, but he like walked out of the studio several times. He had to compose himself.
He's crying.
Oh, I got to do better. No, I'll tell you what.
Happened. He might have been traumatized.
I'll tell you what happened, and I got to do a better. I'm so okay. So here's what I realized. So Jerry came in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then Lane had killed himself, you know, some weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. Or days.
It was really sick.
Right. And so he sat down and he's like, hey, no questions about Lane or the band or ain't no question about anything. And I went, I cannot promise you that because people call in. They might have a call. It might say on the screen, I got a question about herpes, but then they may ask a question right. about Lane.
You can't control the call.
I can't control it. And he goes, hey, man, if you can't control it, I'm out of here. Uh-huh. And I went, well, I can't control it. And he's like, no questions about Lane. And I said, I can promise you I won't bring it right. up. But I cannot promise you it won't come up because we really can't control the calls. And he goes, well, then I'm out. Yep. And I go, okay, you're out. Like, I do what
trying
I do.
To be honest.
Now I'm excited he's leaving because I hated guests, you know, less mic time for me. So I was like, hey, man, I completely understand. I respect it. I get it. It's too soon. I can't guarantee it. He goes, I'm out of here. And he like gets up and he leaves. And then he kind of circles back. And he's like, okay, but you got to promise me there's no Lane talk. And I go, I cannot promise you that. And I completely respect. At this point, I'm just a fucking leave.
Right.
I completely and utterly respect you leaving. There will be no hard feelings. And it will not be held against you. And he goes, okay, I'll do it. And he sits down. And I was like, oh, fuck. Now I have to talk to this asswipe.
You could have just said, well, you know what? It feels like an Elaine kind of night, right?
I should have.
Yeah.
I thought he was going
to
leave.
I was out front smoking a cigarette. And all of a sudden, he storms out. And he's smoking a cigarette next to me and kind of crying a little bit. I'm like, this is awkward. And then I went back inside. And then he came inside. And he was crying in the studio where I was. And I'm like, this is very awkward now. He was a troubled man.
The Cowboy Junkies, I hated. Yeah, Violent Femmes were dicks.
You called them slugs.
Or slugs.
Because they didn't add much to the program.
Oh, you know the best was? Not in a bad way, but in a bad way. I remember when the Aquabats came in. And like the Aquabats came in and like, where are you guys from in Orange County? We're from Aquatonia. And
oh,
I was
no.
like, okay. I said, in you're not going to make it for 2 hours. Yeah. It's not going to work for 2 hours. Uh-huh. It just, you got to. Do
right
it.
Yeah.
You can't do it. Like, why? We're from Aquatonia. And I'm like, okay, Aquabats, don't do it. Please don't do this. Just
help
let
me
it
help
let
you.
It go. Really let me interview you.
I think
answer
all Mormon.
Calls. Yeah. And I was like, now where you someone's from Irvine? Aquatonia. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
The whole fucking night, these fucking guys who can't pull it off. They couldn't. I did Loveline as Mr. Burcham.
Mm-hmm.
I was a guest on my own show before I was the host.
So Phil Hendry of you.
I know. Mr. Ricky Rackman was hosting with Drew, and I did 2 hours of Mr. Burcham on Loveline when it was local.
Wow.
Because it was only on K-Rock, so I knew Mr. Burcham.
Your first taste of Loveline, right? That Drew got you on as a guest as Burcham, right?
Right. Now, I kind of had the chops to pull off this character for 2 hours, but I wasn't Mormon
right.
or from Aquatonia. So
or trying to get like a music career off the ground with that quirkiness.
I was able to pull it off. Oh, you have the Holocaust
call? Yeah. So the entire call is about 8 minutes, so we're just going to cut to the part where you start giving advice. So there's a phone sex operator who calls in. And she wants to keep everybody online on the phone longer.
I screened this call.
Right.
Yeah.
Settle awesome. Down, Brad. And then, Chris, also be careful. I mean, I know that it's podcast. You can say fuck and all. But there is some very offensive things that that Adam kind of bridges into soon after the call that cost us a station that night. So
really?
By all means, keep
what
it rolling.
What was it?
It was about Jews and ovens.
Yeah, you're like, I'll cook them. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, I was making it.
You're compounding the problem, Brian.
All right, go ahead. Oh, we lost an affiliate.
Like,
all right.
You know what you ought to do? Here's what you ought to do. Because you don't
you don't want to be too mundane, and you want to be sexual, but maybe if she did it in a sort of subliminal way, she could add a little time, like you go like,
which
so the guy goes like,
favorite sports team?
What are you wearing? No, she'll go like, I'm wearing a lacy black teddy Holocaust with a long
Hitler
camisole. Yeah, cancer. And just see if you could slide in like cancer, Holocaust, grandparents. And see what you could do.
That's good.
And I bet it would add some time. So, the mind works. The mind is very interesting that way.
Subliminal phone sex operator.
Right.
SNL ought to do this.
Right. Yeah.
I think they did.
They did do it, actually. But I think that would work for her.
Yeah.
Let's try that. Let's see. Lorene?
Yes?
Yeah, why don't you try that? So, okay. So here's what you do. I ask you what you're wearing, and somewhere you work in Vietnam very quickly. Very quickly. All right?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. And what are you wearing, sugar?
Oh, I'm wearing a nice lace garter with a nice black lace bra.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. How's that?
Yeah, but
Vietnam.
It was almost perfect.
Where's the Vietnam part?
Vietnam.
Yeah. Okay, so listen. It's my fault for attempting to communicate with people. That
I was amazed
show.
That I thought that you had pulled that off with her, and she was like right on it.
Yeah,
but sure. It was too good to be true.
I know.
Well, maybe she actually worked it in. We just didn't notice it.
Yeah,
I did notice my penis take a little dip in the middle of her description. Interesting. True.
Well, I'm telling you.
All right, I got to try one more time. Whether just Lorene.
Yeah.
Okay, let me explain. I have this subliminal suggestion idea.
Don't use that word. That's too.
I have this quick word thing that's going to hurt the guy's penises, okay? Now, when you describe what you're wearing, I want you to very quickly work in the word Holocaust.
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 Okay.
Think of me as cancer.
Do you know what the Holocaust is?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Oh, boy.
All right. That's all right. Hey, by the way, LA Unified Schools District, everybody. I'm a product. God bless you guys. You're really doing a job over there. Subliminal,
like
Holocaust.
Jews.
Okay. Work in cancer.
Jews?
Work in cancer.
You know what cancer is?
So put that in. Okay, great.
All right. Work in the word cancer when you're describing what you're wearing, all right?
Oh, most definitely.
All right, you ready? Bring. Bring.
Hi, how you doing?
Ooh, hi, what's your name?
I'm Sugar.
Sugar, I'm Ace.
Hey, Ace.
Yeah, what are you wearing?
Well, I'm wearing a nice black garter. Just thinking about the Holocaust right now.
The greatest moments in radio history.
The thinking is the fact that she put it in the form of sentence.
God bless Sugar.
And she said it seductively.
She's a mother of seven now.
She did call back years later. I hesitate to even bring it up because I don't remember the call much at all. Like, we caught up with what she was doing. She had a normal job, and she was kind of a dud of a call years later. But she did check in back
I
in
didn't
with
screen us. That call.
People get sober, they stop stripping, and they get boring, man. They don't get better. All right. What else are we working? So it took so many years to make groupers.
Oh my God, yeah. That's what
now,
you don't realize.
Now what? What's next?
So this is a comeuppance movie for sure, where, you know, the homophobes get the comeuppance at the end there, or throughout the movie, actually. Thank you so much for watching it, by the way.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
it. I actually watched Uppity, so it's like we're kindred spirits there watching each other's
movies.
You
should bundle those together.
Yeah.
Like a quality double feature.
I love that Uppity, by the way.
Oh, thank you. You were able to make this movie on what budget?
$85,000.
Jesus, it's unbelievable how... Yeah. Inexpensive, you can make a move or
we called in every
way.
Favor. We called, you know,
what did you shoot it on? Digital something?
Yeah, it was a Red Weapon, was the camera that
I know
used.
The red ones. Are they called Red Weapon?
Well, Red Weapon is a model of the red cameras.
Do they overheat?
No, they actually have a water cooling red camera. Geo actually sent me a link to a video of this company.
Because they had an overheating issue?
They did have the 8Ks have overheating issues.
Sorry to take that deep dive, but next, what are you working on your next project?
So yeah, Groupers was the first cheap movie I wrote. I never think about budget when I'm writing scripts. I'm just thinking about a story, right? And that was the first cheap one where I'm like, I could probably make this for under $100,000 because most of it takes place in the bottom of an empty pool, not a whole lot of actors. Not a lot of characters. And I'm using this one to hopefully springboard to two other movies that are also comeuppance movies that are written, ready to go. I really want to make them. One is about pedophiles. They get their comeuppance. It's a camp-themed movie, which I wrote a few years ago. It's another black comedy.
Sure.
And then one is the Big Game Hunters.
The comeuppance.
Yeah.
It's weird because, not weird, but Tarantino is now... Don't feel like he started that way, but he's come into the comeuppance.
Oh
film
yeah,
game,
his movies
you know?
All have a revenge theme, at least the last few.
Yeah, and earlier on, it was like, well, the gimp got his, but it wasn't
the theme
of the whole movie. Now it's an interesting genre, and it's super satisfying.
Yeah.
All right, let me hit stamps.com, and then we'll break and do the news. Postage rates have gone up again. Stamps.com, big discounts off post office rates. 5 cents off every first class stamp and up to 40% off shipping rates. And it saves time. No more inconvenient trips. The post office is right on your computer now with stamps.com. You can buy and print U.S. postage for any letter, any package, 24/7. 700,000 small businesses use stamps.com. We use them here all the time. We send out all our uppity Blu-rays and all our merch and everything with stamps.com. Special offer. Got a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitment or contract. Just go to stamps.com. Click on the microphone, top of the homepage. Type in Adam. These guys have been with us forever, and we've been using them forever, and you should too. That's stamps.com. Enter Adam. All right, quick break. Back with Anderson and the news right after this.